Welcome to Ida History, the show that digs up the most thought-provoking stories from Idaho's history. Here are your hosts, Jeff Wade and Mark Iverson.
That's right. This is Ida History, the podcast. And I'm Jeff Wade, sitting right next to my co-host, Mr. Mark Iverson. What's up, Mark?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling ready to talk about the sex trade in Idaho.
This is one of your favorite subjects, huh?
I'm all about sex for money. In the past tense, of course.
Well, you know, before we get too into this, I want to tell a little funny anecdote, if I may, Mark.
Please.
So back in the day when you first started Ida History and our website, specifically, you did a little blog post about prostitution in Boise. And here, what, 3 years later?
Yeah.
People often find our website by searching for prostitutes in Boise or prostitutes near me and end up finding us. How does that make you feel, Mark?
Well, while they're looking for a little purchasable, loving, I do hope they learn a little bit about what they're purchasing, The heritage and all that.
Right. So we get the Google search analytic emails once a month, and it tells us those search terms. So I always get a chuckle out of that every time I see that.
It's funny, and it kind of highlights how even when something's illegal, quotation marks, it's not really illegal, quotation marks.
Making something illegal just creates a market for it, right?
You know it.
Google searches aside, we're going to talk about some... Actually, not just in this episode, but I'm sure throughout the course of our show, we're going to be talking about some very adult type things, because that's history, right? So we're going to be using terms that, you know, might be offensive today, but we're going to go back and we're going to use more of the terminology of the times, I guess would be the way to put that.
That's the only way to go, Jeff.
That's right. We're going to talk about things that are very outside of the norm on this show. Maybe make some people uncomfortable, but I think that's kind of what we're going for.
Trigger warning.
Trigger warning.
No snowflakes here, pal.
Well, we'll see about that. If you make me cry, then I'm leaving.
Okay, I thought you were a prison guard and you're all tough.
Well, that doesn't make a person tough, unfortunately. All right, Mark, let's get into this. Why don't we?
You know, so the first thing I want to talk about is the sources of information we use. Great secondary literature or written by professors, journalists, you know, relying on primary sources, which we also use. And those are sources from the day and age when the events we're talking about happened. So in this case, I'll start with my secondary sources here. We're talking about a great thesis that you can find at Boise State University Library. It's A Necessary Evil, Prostitution, Patriarchs, and Prophets in Boise City, 1863 to 1909 by Joanne Russell. This was a master's thesis, and she did like 10 years of research into prostitution in Boise, and it's impressive. Another one is something you can pick up anywhere, but it's a great book. Selling Sex in the Silver Valley, A Business Doing Pleasure by Dr. Heather Brandstetter. She's a Wallace native, and she really goes into detail. It's entertaining, but academic. Good Time Girls of the Rocky Mountains by Jan Mecca Collins. Good stuff. Fun read. Daughters of Joy, Sisters of Misery, Prostitutes in the American West, 1865 to 1890. My personal favorite, Murder and Mayhem in Boise by the illustrious Jeff Wade and the stupendous Mark Iverson.
I just happen to have a copy of that sitting on my desk right here.
My goodness, it is popular, isn't it?
It really is.
Basin of Gold, Life in the Boise Basin by Arthur Hart. Prostitute Dictionary of the Old West by Jay Moynihan. Wicked Boise by... Our colleague,
contemporary.
We haven't met, contemporary, yeah. Janelle M. Oh man, this is a name. Scheffelmayer. I think I got that right. Scheffelmayer. Soiled Doves. It's kind of like the classic. It's a good read. It has its mistakes, but it's really a good read. Soiled Doves, Prostitutions in the Early West by Anne Seagraves. Upstairs Girls, Prostitution in the American West. A Chinaman's Chance, The Chinese on the Rocky Mountain Mining Frontier by Dr. Liping Xu, I think. It's a Z-H-U. But,
Dr. Xu? Okay.
Yeah, Xu. Yeah. Numbered, Inside Idaho's Prison for Women, 1887 to 1968. Great read. Love the old pen. Menaces to Society, Sex, Adultery, and Abortion Crimes of Idaho Women Prisoners, 1900 to 1960. A BSU's master thesis highlighted in Idaho Yesterdays in 1994 by Rosemary L. Wimberly. And then let's get into the primary documents. You got myriad articles from the Idaho Tri-Weekly and then later the Daily Statesman, Idaho World articles, Spokane spokesman articles, the Wallace, whatever it is, Examiner, I don't know, Twin Falls, News and shit, I don't know, lots of magazines. We got census data from 1870, 1880, 1890, 1900, court testimony of Nettie Bone in her trial for, shooting a guy. We'll get to that. John Broadbent, he was an illustrious citizen of Boise who had some non-illustrious business dealings, and we'll talk about those shitbirds. Also, China Mary hearings. This was a very interesting case, and the teenage boy in me just can't pass this up. China Mary's real name was a hoe.
Did you call her a hoe?
Well, that's her name, Jeff.
Oh, okay.
You can call a female dog a bitch. You're just being accurate.
That's true.
As my wife yells at me all the time. But the thing is that when somebody had a trial, you know, they oftentimes in these prostitution cases, they had to have somebody make sure that they went to court. So in this case, it was her friend. And a hoe was led to court by a poo.
A poo and a hoe.
That poo led that hoe.
That's...
God, that is wrong. That is wrong. I'm
terrible,
sorry.
Terrible.
I can't not... Blame me, not Jeff. And then, anyway, we used a lot of maps from the Broadbent collection. He had a whole, you know, like, trust set up. He had so much money when he died that he had, like, a whole, crew of people looking after his interests. And the sauna building on 9th and Main was actually one of his buildings, and he had brothels all over town.
Who didn't?
You know, if there's a way to make some scratch, you'd take it.
That's the way to do it back in the day.
So those are our sources, and no historian worth his salt would not mention those.
It's definitely quite the library of prostitution you uncovered here.
You know, I like to get all up in it.
You sure do.
And I would also like to thank our friends at the Idaho State Archives.
Our best friends.
They're the best. Kathy Charlton, Misha Brady, he's a cool guy, and Angie, of course.
Of course, Angie.
Angie Smith?
Davis.
Davis. Just kidding, Angie. Angie Smith. Davis. Anyway, we love them. They get us some great sources, help us find some stuff, and we have some great times researching. So, that being said, should we get into it?
Yes, sure.
Okay, are you interested, Jeff?
I mean, that's what we're here, right?
You're nodding. You're doing your drug nod. Did you smoke too much?
Yes.
Okay.
A little bit of opium before we started.
Oh, well, you know, that just fits the historic time period. But what we want to talk about is prostitution in Idaho, roughly 1863, you know, when the territory of Idaho is founded. But we can go back to, like, even 1861, of course, the finding of gold in Jeff Lewiston area, right?
Florence. It was Orofino Creek off the Clearwater River.
Yeah. And, you know, if there were miners there, there was a sex worker, a working woman, a soiled dove soon to follow. So, to get started, prostitution has been around since humankind has formed civilizations and societies within those civilizations. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Crom, the caveman, solicited Cromina, you know, with like spare chunk of mammoth meat, you know, to take care of his caveman sexual tension. But Americans might think they have the right way to like morally define paying for sex. Wrong. It's so wrong. But many different cultures and societies have viewed the ethics, if you will, of transactional sex in a different way, many different ways, almost endlessly over thousands of years of human history.
You know, speaking of, you know, different cultures, especially here in the United States, or what is now the United States, you know, I understand that various North American tribes saw it as an honor to give for a woman to give herself sexually to a man. And she would do that for the betterment of her family household. Now, I'm not saying that these women were, say, promiscuous as we think about it today, but giving the gift of intimacy was an honor for both the man and the woman in the coupling. So yeah, marriages are made that way, alliances are strengthened, and old enmities are ended. And really the great and not so great families of Europe, and eventually America, gave their daughters in arranged marriages. It's not so different, is it?
Not by much in my telling. You know, I'm not saying that all tribal women were thrilled by these arrangements to, you know, have sex by any means. But, you know, the point is that different civilizations have defined what is and what is not acceptable in many divergent ways. One common trait, however, is that women were commonly a commodity to control. From colonial times in America, where sex was defined explicitly by how Christian colonists interpreted right and wrong by what they read in the Bible, to, you know, I don't know if you want to say evolving or not, I guess that's subjective to your beliefs, but to the Victorian times, when the beliefs found in the Bible would come to be applied less rigidly, women would be controlled and told what was acceptable and acceptable based upon the wider beliefs that were kind of based on this Judeo-Christian belief system. So, you know, it goes into the shadows a little more as time goes on.
Yeah, we're talking about putting a scarlet letter on ye old cloak back in early Americas, right?
Yeah, plus, you know, if one just happened to luck out, which often happened, there was a whole, you know, procedure in old colonial times. They'd have a noose placed around their neck. It would be slung over a gallows, and they'd be forced, the adulterer or the person in of sexual shame, they'd be forced to stand publicly and be publicly shamed, and then given a scarlet letter. Usually an A, right? An A. And it wasn't always scarlet. It would be a bright letter that would clash with your usual cloak or ye old pantaloons because people didn't have, like, you know, they can't go to the Gap and buy a bunch of cheap shit that was made in Asia, but it's advertised like it's the fanciest shit on earth, you know? They had a few different garments, so.
And not many color choices either.
No. You had dark, you know, dark and dark.
Yeah.
Basically.
Right. So, yeah, we're talking about, you know, the Victorian times. It was all about pushing these kind of cultural norms of the illicit. And most oftentimes, you know, those cultural norms were having to do with sex. And you're kind of pushing it into the darkness where acceptable folks could look down in judgment on the wretches pushed into the periphery of society. Prostitutes wouldn't be labeled with an A, but they would be labeled nonetheless. The, quote, fallen women of the Americas and of the American West lived on the fringes of society.
Many acceptable, quote unquote, citizens of most Western towns saw prostitution as a necessary evil. That's a key term tonight, a necessary evil. It was a deal with the devil, I guess, if you look at it that way, meant to calm the sexual beasts lying nascent just under the surface of men of all classes. In other words, "Hi, ladies, we desperately need your services, but fuck you for saving us from our own destructive natures."
Exactly. So society in America, and definitely in the West, narrowly defined what women could be. A virtuous woman was kept in the home to, you know, make sandwiches and clean up and do that kind of work. And they were expected to have children, of course. And they were rigidly controlled when they did set forth out into society. And then you had the fallen women. They were needed, but they were ostracized and judged as foul by the very society that provided her with no actual job opportunities other than factory work or domestic servitude, and sometimes, you know, maybe the occasional school marm. And, you know, just these are all jobs that women could barely support themselves and their children on.
Yeah, and, you know, even these ladies were looked down upon if you had a legit job. It was a lose-lose situation for any woman who wasn't basically taken care of by a man. And, you know, it was get in the home, keep your place. If women didn't comply, they were cast out. This all applies to Idaho as a territory and as a state during its early years. So today, Jeffrey, we'll be talking about prostitution during Idaho's frontier and progressive periods. So from roughly 1863 to 1920, this is too large a scope to include most Idaho towns. So we'll talk about like Wallace and Boise the most, with comparisons to, or at least stories from towns like Nampa, Idaho City. We have these primary sources that we talked about, and we get the story. The most color and the most authenticity comes from those sources. So, you know, we'll add some of those to add a little flourish, a pinch of flourish, and some stats to give it a little garnish of authenticity.
Sounds like quite a recipe.
Oh, you know it is. It's delicious, Jeff. But I think this is an overview. There's just so much stuff. We need to get more specific, I guess, in other episodes to focus on the various towns.
Of course we can. Well, Mark, why don't we get on going on this? Well, let's take a quick break for a word for our sponsors.
Jeff, I'm not sure you're aware, but we're in the history business.
Oh, yeah?
The Ida history business. And we go to lots of historic sites, and we always talk about how best to preserve them. You got any ideas?
You know, one way is 3D scanning, and there's a great company based right here in Boise, Idaho, called Datum Tech Solutions.
Do tell.
Datum Tech Solutions can sell and rent survey equipment and construction technology such as total stations, GPS location tools, drones, and 3D scanners. They also train people how to use them.
Hey, Jeff, do you have any murder houses with blood dripping down the walls that need sold and need sold quickly?
I might after this weekend.
Fantastic. I have two ladies that are just right for the job. Melissa Call, my friend and fellow Washingtonian, and Kara Harwick, an Eagleite from Eagle, Idaho. They've teamed up, and they're a member of Birch Leaf Real Estate out of Eagle, Idaho. And these ladies can... they can sell your home quick, whether somebody's been murdered there or not. To learn more, go to www.birchleafgroup.com or reach Melissa or Kara at 208-254-0490.
Hey, Mark, I'm trying to find a book. Do you know any bookstores in this area?
I do, Jeff. Right in downtown Meridian, soon to be a brick-and-mortar store coming in 2023. It's called Pearl House Collective, and it's a woman-owned independent bookstore featuring big stories from the small presses. We can appreciate that.
Sounds great.
And, you know, Pearl House connects you with dynamic, enriching texts that you'll want to share with your family and friends. And Pearl House hosts the Banned Book Club of Boise, where community members read recently challenged and banned books and discuss them nicely. So join the community online at Pearl House Collective and at Boise Banned Book Club.
All right, Mark. Well, that was a wonderful ad break we just had. So let's roll on into this episode about prostitution.
So, Jeff, before diving into this sex quagmire that we've concocted for us.
Sounds dirty.
God, it's dirty. I need some soap.
Giggity.
Some hand sanitizer. I thought we should at least go over some slang terms used by the ladies of the demi monde, the fallen women, you know, the prostitute classes of America.
All right, lay this on me.
Okay, well, like many other groups on the fringes of society, those in the woman for hire industry created their own slang, allowing them to communicate with one another really separate from the squares. First, Jeff, would you recite a quaint poem I found written by some long-ago woman of the evening?
All right, here I go. I wish I were a fascinating bitch. I'd never be poor. I'd always be rich. I'd live in a house with a little red light. I'd sleep all day and I'd work all night. Yeah, that sounds like a Kiss song almost.
Good job.
Thank you. That certainly speaks more to the popular fiction of prostitute life, of course, than to the reality.
Let's look at what the language says of the sex trade over time. So some of the key words that prostitutes would use dealt with like where they actually lived and sold their goods. So you had the term a bawdy house, B-A-W-D-Y, bawdy house, bawdy, whatever. A bawd was one who was employed in pandering to sexual debauchery, a woman keeping a place of prostitution. A bawdy is the business of providing sex. So the term together, a bawdy house, right? So the term dates back to 13th century England, you know. Ye old bawdy shack.
So I've heard you use that term a lot, but I've never had a chance to look into actually what it meant.
You know, that's one of my main complaints of society these days is kids just don't know about 13th century, you know, like English terms.
It's true.
There was also, of course, a boarding house, which, of course, is a euphemism for a brothel. A secret code, a wink, wink, that most people, sex workers, are not understood. Then you had brothel, which is, of course, the best known term. And usually a brothel could mean several different types of establishments. It could be a high class brothel where drinks were available and the women were younger. But time for the John or the client was not rushed in such an establishment. It could also mean a run-of-the-mill middle-class working man's brothel. The women here worked more, and their time was a factor. But a John had plenty of time to conclude his transaction, Jeff. Then there were the volume brothels, and that sounds like it. You know, sounds and exactly what it means. It's where you paid for like 15 minutes at a time. Get to work, gents. And so time was definitely a factor. Clothes of the Johns and the women generally stayed on. And there was a thick animal hide pelt that was kept at the end of the bed because they wouldn't even take off their shoes. And back in the day, you know, your boots could get rather nasty. Then you had parlor houses, and this was the highest end establishment in the sex trade that a man could frequent. It had a beautiful furnishings. Time was not a factor at all. Meals were sumptuous. The drink flowed, and women seduced. They were trained to seduce the Johns, although, you know, it was clear that this was a sexual transaction. But we like to be played, us gents. And often these women would become mistresses of wealthy men that frequented these establishments, but time was always against the woman. And so as, you know, selfishly she aged, sometimes she would be kicked to the side, unfortunately.
So parlor house seems like it was more of a, like you said, it was an upscale or, you know, this is where the upper echelons of society would go to get their sexual attentions taken care of.
Exactly. I guess Dunkin' Donuts coffee would be your volume house.
Okay.
Starbucks would be your middle class place. And then, you know, shoot, I don't know.
Yeah, that's shout your favorite coffee shop here.
Yeah, Italian, like maybe like Coffee and Supply of Eagle would be your upper end parlor house where you pay for the fine stuff. Okay, a bordello, you know, another term for a brothel. A crib, this is important. Originally a term meant to describe a stall of an ox. Yeah, yes, folks. This came to mean a small or narrow room. And then it was adopted by the prostitution language to mean a small apartment, you know, like usually one or two rooms used by a prostitute. These women tended to be older or, unfortunately, less attractive by, majority standards or views. And they oftentimes were scarred women because it was a violent life and they were frequently attacked. And so it was a lower rung establishment class. There was a whole class structure in prostitution from parlor house at the top to streetwalker at the bottom and crib just before that. And then to talk about the even lower, like, or maybe the same level of a streetwalker was the hog ranch. That's it, folks. That's true. A brothel that sprang up near military forts often, and it didn't have to be that, but in reality, it was a shitty building with dirty rooms or pens in which sexual transactions occurred. It was a dirty existence where prostitutes earned basically nothing, but they were kept from life on the streets. At Fort Boise, there were laundresses' cabins that were all along Cottonwood Creek. You know, today you drive your ass past the softball field up Mountain Cove Road to take the dog to the dog park, and you're driving over ground where there used to be laundress cabins because it was next to the creek. But oftentimes these women would work for nothing really except food, room, and board, and to get a little bit of money, they would have sex with soldiers. And so, like, you know, sex and a military camp go hand in hand, you know what I mean?
So these cribs and these hog ranches were basically meant to keep these women out of sight and out of mind of the more Gentile society.
For sure. If you were a soldier, and as you know, man, to be a soldier on after the Civil War wasn't quite the honor that we imagine it was like today. In the, you know, we're all going to put a yellow ribbon on the back of our cars, which, you know, yeah, thank you, soldiers. It wasn't like that back in the day. And so it's like, yeah, soldier, you're a, you know, degenerate. Go have sex with the women that are also degenerates. That's how it was seen, not that I believe that.
A lot of the soldiers that did fight in the Civil War ended up causing a lot of the violence and problems on the frontier later on.
Oh, yeah, because they had a ton of PTSD. Oh, yeah. Yep. So the women in these hog ranches or on the streets died of exposure, overdoses, because, yeah, they smoked opium and they committed suicide in horrible means, and we'll talk about that later. But
well, Mark, you wrote out some terms for me to read off at this point. I guess I'll do that now.
I surely did. It's from a preschool dictionary.
So, of course, we have the term prostitute. I think it's pretty self-explanatory to this part. Whore is another one that's pretty, I think we all know what that means.
Again, we don't believe these things, folks, just for authenticity.
So. Yeah, it's just the terms of the time that we're talking about here. An actress was a term often used by census takers to denote a prostitute. That's an interesting one. Adventuress, which I like that one.
Oh, yeah.
She was an independent prostitute that would stay clear of the brothels and pimps and madams.
Indiana Joanna.
So you don't have to share your cut, right?
That's right.
okay.
Have fun with this one, dude.
Hopefully I don't mess this one up to it. I'm going to say this is Bak Hak Chai.
As far as I can tell.
It sounds pretty good. So this is a term for Chinese sex slaves, meaning 100 men's wife. Fortunately, sexual slavery is still a common problem these days, but we'll go on to blanket whores. So in a newly settled area before brothels were constructed, prostitutes would conduct business on a blanket in a tent or outdoors under the trees or in the bushes. So they call them blanket whores.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward.
A picnic basket and a condom or two, or sheepskin.
Brazen woman, which is a term used by acceptable women to speak of prostitutes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these...
They sure are brazen, Jeffrey. I tell you.
Mark, you're quite brazen yourself.
I try to be, dear.
Then we have harlot. I think most people have heard that one. Courtesan. This is a high-class prostitute of the parlor, or one of the wealthy men, or private prostitute, I guess. So these are your noble kind of class, your royalty, your richy-rich businessmen out on the frontier. We have daughters of joy, which is frequently applied to Chinese prostitute or sex slaves. We have fallen women. We've heard that one quite a bit. Public woman, girl of the town, which is one I've seen some of my research. Hooker, of course, is another name for a streetwalker. And then we have a fancy lady, or, you know, everyone's favorite, a soiled dove.
Mm, definitely.
So you get it. There are tons of terms meaning prostitute. So we might use a couple of those in the rest of this episode.
So, yeah, you know, terms, lots of ways to describe the demi monde. But here are a few more, because I just can't help myself. The all-night price, you know, I mean, like the value meal, to purchase a working girl's time for the entire night. That's what that meant.
Was that 8 hours? Or
you know, I think standard? So. But, you know, here's something that's crazy, and I don't think I bring this up, you know, too much, but a lot of times these hardened miners, loggers, you know, gamblers, they wanted just the attention of a woman. Sometimes it was about cuddling.
It's true.
And just getting some... I mean, it's not the same when your buddy's like, there, pal. Let me console you.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just wanted a woman to hold you tight and tell you it was all going to be okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's move on. A bad disorder meant, well, you had a dose of venereal disease. Getting burned. This is my favorite. It happened a time or two to me myself. Back in my wild days, Jeffrey. Meant getting VD.
I heard it does burn.
You heard, huh?
I heard.
Yeah. Biochloride tablet. Maybe I said that right.
Close.
This was a dissolvable pill that was used to, yes, folks, this will get lurid, douche. Not just a term for guys that drive sports cars too fast. But anyway, this pill was used to clean a woman's privates after, you know, a night working. But it was used sometimes to commit suicide by these unfortunate women. Let's see. Brass checks. Brass checks were essentially going to a brothel, and there'd be some silver coin-looking brass, well, essentially coins with I guess, services, particular services. You know, you go into the Burger King, you know, I'll take the chicken finger fries. I don't know if that's Burger King, but the McClucks.
That's,
whatever. You know, you go in there and you had a menu and you would order and you'd be given a brass check. You'd take this sucker up. I don't know what it was about the Parisian treatment, but on lots of different menus at brothels, that was the expensive thing.
Hmm.
It's always the French, man.
That's right.
Freedom fries, baby. But you'd go in with that coin, that brass check, and you'd give it to the working woman, and she'd put it in her stocking and next to a gun or a knife. And she would, at the end of the night, morning, like 4 a.m., 5 a.m., go down to the madame or the pimp or both and divvy up the coins, and then they'd kind of like divvy up the profits. So that like was a brass check.
So like a arcade token, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
The best kind of arcade, you know.
I mean, you don't get to play video games, though.
No, but your joystick is definitely
a lot. Yowzer.
Oh, okay. Anyway, brothel gowns were white smocks worn during work for easy access, if you will, by a prostitute. Carbolic acid was household cleaning an agent, essentially, often used to commit suicide, and it was a nasty way to go, folks.
It was a very sweet-tasting liquid, so it was easy to drink.
Yes.
But it killed you.
Yeah, so quickly. Easy going down, but rough on the digestive system. Okay. So, yeah, women would drink that, and I can think of cases in Boise City where they would. A creeper. Not just a term for your weird neighbor. It was a thief that often was in cahoots. I like that word, cahoots. With a soiled dove, and she would, or a prostitute working in a crib, and she would essentially leave a man's coat in the front room of a crib or somewhere off, out of sight. And when she was servicing her customer, the creeper would come in and rob the man.
What a dick.
What a dick. Fancy man was muscle for a brothel or a parlor house, and he helped with odds and ends around the establishment. A professor was an elegant man of the parlor house who was hired to play piano. He would charm the guests when they waited and drank their fancy drinks. And he could speak, he was an educated sort. He could speak about business matters, history, philosophy, all sort of current events, you know. Female monthly pills, morning after pills, basically. Female solution, that was an abortion. Essentially. And it wasn't just a female solution. It was really a male solution, too.
So the old coat hanger or whatever you had handy.
Yep, exactly. It was dangerous, too.
Yeah.
Fine day was the day when madams or prostitutes would go and literally pay fines. It was a fine day. And they'd go and pay the police or the officials. And yes, this was rampant. Their fines.
So are we talking about bribes, or are we talking about actual, like, court-ordered...
Oh, no, these are like bribes, but they were expected.
Okay.
It was like a whole system of just against the law, but yet defined system of economics in these cities,
okay.
Which is kind of nuts, you know? I mean, but I kind of love it at the same time. Guidebooks, exactly what it meant. You went into town as a man looking for a woman for the evening, and you used a guidebook.
Again, this is like Google back in the day.
Yeah, right.
Like for prostitutes. Mm-hmm.
Honey, yeah. I'm going to go pick up a town guidebook before we go to the hotel. In a family way meant the prostitute, the woman, was pregnant. A Kate was a John, or a customer's, favorite gal. A lady's protector essentially was a contraceptive sponge, like a diaphragm, type of diaphragm. Laudanum was a liquid derivative of opium that was sold over the counter for a time, but it was used for headaches. That's what I tell the police when they pull me over. It's for headaches, man! Anyway, by these soiled doves, they used it to ease pain, but also the pain of their existence, and they would commit suicide this way, hoping for an easy end. This is my favorite, Little Casino. I think we've all been here, folks. VD Gravy Gonorrhea.
I have not been to that establishment.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, a Mac was a pimp. They really weren't good people, you know. Mercury treatment. Well, dude, folks at home, go up to your computers, or I guess you have a laptop, so you can just take them out. Your smart device, and look up syphilis.
Don't do it.
It's a trap. Sometimes they're on University of Washington archives. Has quite the collection. Shout out to my cousin, Dr. Stephanie Cabral. But she is she specializes in venereal disease.
Oh.
And she knows all about these syphilis pictures. And let me tell you.
Maybe we can get her on as a guest sometime.
Oh, my God. I would love to. But it would basically eat away at your flesh, causing lesions that would eventually root down through your cartilage or your bone. Mm. It was horrible. So the mercury treatment, though it sounds horrible, was like, screw it. I'm desperate. And so basically you would take a liquid mercury and rub it on your wound. You know, I'd make sure to tell my children, iodine. Isn't that bad?
Right.
Although that's sort of old school in and of itself. Oh, wait. What's the camphor finique? No.
The what?
Oh, damn it. The stuff you put... Alcohol isn't so bad,
yeah.
Kids, for your scrapes. Imagine if you had syphilis.
Right.
Oh, this is... never mind. I take back. Little Casino is not my favorite. Peculiar members are my favorite. This was a term for balls, nads, man satchel, the full scrotmigoat, testicles. Pox was syphilis. And just to round out the end here, a runner was a most likely a child who would go get drinks for patrons and the prostitutes. Shady Go Naked was a loose overcoat. Shady Go Naked was a loose overcoat or cloak that was used by crib women that would sit in windows to display their goods more easily. Sheepskin was a condom made of a sheep intestine, or maybe another intestine, I'm not sure.
Reusable, I hear. Yeah. It's wash and rinse.
Wash and rinse. Silver nitrate treatment. Man, this one sounds fun. If you had the gonorrhea, an injection of silver nitrate solution would be squeezed up your urethra or shot up. Mm. Sounds fun. Mm. Solitary vice. This is a good one, too. This meant flogging the dolphin, patting the porpoise, choking the chicken, beating the bishop, Jeff, burping the worm. Okay, I'll stop.
Okay.
And then Whitechapel was the name of the place in London where Jack the Ripper was, you know, where he was...
Killing people.
Killing
prostitutes,
he
I
was,
guess.
He was very successful in what he did. A total dick. but the Whitechapel... The name for Whitechapel in London, where prostitutes would work, was used for like places in Chicago and all the way down to Boise. The Tenderloin, Chicago's Tenderloin District, you know, a lot of meat was packed in the Tenderloin. Ooh. Oh, man.
Which we'll talk about Boise's Tenderloin here in a bit, too.
Yeah, yeah. And they had, they called it Whitechapel or the Tenderloin of Boise. And then the last one was a titbit. Or a younger or new prostitute. Okay. But I have gone on long enough.
All right. Yes, you have. Let's get a move on. Talking about Idaho prostitution.
Dude, I know, man. But this is gold. There's so much here. But you're right.
Gold.
Alas. Shall we take a break for station identification?
I would have to do that on the podcast, but we can take a sponsor break.
Oh, yeah.
We can...
I'm on so much media, Jeff. I just forget.
All right. Yes. All right.
I live in Eagle, after all.
All right. We'll be right back. All right. And we're back from our little commercial break. Thank you for our sponsors. We appreciate each and every one of you. So, Mark, we're going to talk kind of how prostitution progressed in Idaho now. You know, we all know that they followed miners and merchants from boomtown to boomtown. You know, where the gold miners found a little bit of gold and the ladies made a little bit of money. Some of the first places in Idaho where prostitutes plied their trade were, you know, Florence, Pierce, Wardner, West Bannock, or Idaho City as it came to be called, Hoggum, or Pioneerville as it was named later on, and then Ruby and Silver City down in the Owyhees, and of course, Leesburg, Rocky Bar and Atlanta, Custer, Bonanza, Boise City. I could go on, but, you know, prostitution was everywhere. Miners were.
You know, Jeff, is that a gold nugget in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me, pal?
It's a banana.
It must be one of those organic ones that hasn't been plumped up by, bio fertilizer or whatever. Anyway, yeah, you know, these places would have made or had very rustic establishments in which these women would live. In Boise City, we know prostitutes were working in saloons that were established because of the letters of one Madame Mustache, Eleanor Dumont, I believe, was her name. But she was one of these independent prostitutes. Now, you gave up protection and a roof over your head oftentimes for your freedom. But she was crafty. She carried a stiletto, you know, hidden on her bodice. But she also would gamble. She wasn't just a, you know, she wasn't just a prostitute. She would choose who she would sleep with for money. And she was quite good at gambling. But she eventually had a nice thick patch of peach fuzz on her upper lip. And this became quite the rage. In fact, you would find doctored photos where they would thicken and darken her upper patch. Teenage boys. 19th
century Photoshop.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly, right? Your little pencil, and take a picture of it. Yep. But, yeah, teenage boys lament. Anyway, she was there, so we know prostitution was at about 6th and Idaho Street, 6th and Main. 6th Street used to be Garrison because it led up to the fort that was established in July of 1863, you know.
It'll be Fort Boise.
That's the one.
All right.
Yeah. Later, the Boise Barracks after 1879, but I digress. They also can't call it Camp Boise, you know, and all these things. But, yeah, so ladies like Madame Mustache, or just working women in general, would often keep small daggers, stilettos, or pistols hidden on their person. And I have a story I will tell later in which a hidden weapon saved a working woman's life, or at least getting a beating. I think that's one of your stories, actually, Jeff. Okay. But
I think I've read that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So we're talking about like early saloons where a lot of these prostitutes would gather at first. And these early saloons were tents or adobe structures or, you know, log cabins, basically, with canvas tops. You were fancy, you know, you'd have an actual log cabin building. You know, women worked in the back of these places often, and by the winter of 1864, when miners poured from the hills and mountains to winter in Boise City, rustic wooden and adobe establishments couldn't be erected fast enough. Yeah, these guys wanted a chance to, you know, drink some booze, you know, play some cards, and have some sex.
The Holy Trinity, as I like to call it, Jeff. Bless ye, my son. But, yeah, 1863 to 1864 or so was what I would call the lawless times in Boise. You know, the 1860s, 1870s even. It was the Wild West. But citizens would come in eventually, right? Respectable people, perhaps of the merchants or the farmer class, they would start these new wealthy classes in these communities. And so, you know, these type of people, your moral and upright citizenry, or so we're told, would conflict with the rougher elements in these boom towns, these rougher frontier towns, as they tried to establish a town and a society. You know, and they'd often wind up clashing with shrewd businessmen, or the shrewd businessmen would pretend that they weren't shrewd, but in actuality be shrewd, who they really cared most about profits and would do that at any means. But this kind of pattern was seen all over the West, all over Idaho, but definitely the West.
You better have some examples.
Yes, I do, sir. Well, you know, so in Boise, right where, I'll get to that in a little bit, but right at the intersection of 6th and Idaho, you know, there's the Java on the northwest corner. It's a very nice, the second firehouse is on the northeast corner. Mm-hmm. Very nice corner. Mm-hmm. But back in the 1860s and 70s, there was a guy named Solomon Anthony, and he was a tenement owner. And he owned these cheap buildings, houses made of wood, rough wood, where, you know, Boise City Hall now stands. It was on the Idaho Street side of City Hall, so we're talking the north part of City Hall, but the southeast side of, or southwest side of, 6th and Idaho. But it's where the HR department for the city is, so not much has changed there, Jeff. I kid. You know, I love HR as much as the next human being. Acronyms and positivity, that's what I say, pal. And fitness programs.
Ooh.
But when Solomon owned these cheap rooms that he rented out, you know, as he did in 1871, he had 35 Chinese women that were basically imprisoned in this shitty building. And so a statesman writer touring around the city noted that Mr. Anthony made quite a bit of profit from his properties because he dedicated them, and this is a quote, to the vilest use, making them the abodes of filthy China prostitutes. I think they messed that one up. But Chinese prostitutes, perhaps. But the one article from the same period, but before the fire that happened in 1871 there, speaks to the conditions of these poor women. And basically, they were jailed behind a thick wooden door. And a marshal and a health inspector passed by, and they noted this in their, you know, report. But there was a wooden door with a barred window. And behind this were these, as he said, filthy women that were imprisoned there. They were Chinese, and the stench off of them was awful. He didn't do shit about it, but he noted it. In most cases, you know, I don't want to say the term prostitute because they were Chinese sex slaves. They had no freedom. They were basically the living dead. They had been duped into coming to the West, or they'd been sold by a desperate, you know, family member. You had the Taiping Rebellion going on at that time period. That was one of the worst conflicts in history. You know, it even puts World War I to shame. Mm-hmm. But people were running away from this poverty, disease, and lawlessness in China. So people were starving, so they would sell off these young women. But they would be contracted into arrangements like indentured servant. They signed these contracts not knowing anything about it, and with the interest applied, there was no way they could ever pay it off. So these women were essentially signed into slavery, and this was going on in Boise. You know, so that was an aspect of the frontier period in many of these towns, not just Boise City.
Yeah, so like one of the other places nearby Boise, we'll talk about Idaho City, which is about 40 miles northeast of Boise. So there, a working woman and madame, this is in 1870, the Idaho World nicknamed her the Rocky Mountain Son of a Bitch, which I'm really surprised that a newspaper in 1870 could print that, but, you know, whatever.
By God.
So she was this kind of rough and tough type, and she had an establishment. And she had a Mexican mule packer meet his dismal end after having made some offense. He was horribly beaten and dumped in a stream of water running down the street outside her house. Basically, you know, he was visiting the house of ill repute, I guess. And
the house of the rising sun.
Got the crap beat out of him and dumped outside. So great place to have a good time. So, you know, this is the class of women who they could be tough and they could be dangerous, you know. One article from the Statesman from 1866 describes the loudness of Idaho City prostitutes who profaned the air with obscenities and blasphemies. Can't leave out the blasphemies.
No, gotta have those blasphemies, sir.
Yep. They were actually fining these women. One was fined $50 and the other was fined $5.
I like them. Sign them up.
Reminds me of some of the people I've worked with over the years. So even for the toughs, life was hard living and very tiring. In Quartzburg.
Damn, up in the mountains of Boise Basin.
In 1871, there in Quartzburg, a woman named Kitty King committed suicide by drinking morphine and overdosed and died.
Yeah. Many of these women had been degraded by society that used them and, you know, oh, you're necessary, but by the way, we hate you. Many of these women, you know, sexism, racism continues on sometimes because the people defined negatively sometimes believe it themselves, and this was the case with prostitutes. They were thinking that they were fallen women, as they were called. They were past redemption, and they could never be pure again. They believed they were destined for hell. When a prostitute died, most often, they were, you know, more likely than not, not allowed to be buried inside the confines of a cemetery. In fact, a little later on, outside of the realm of the frontier, but this occurred to a working woman named Leah Perry from Silver City, Idaho, in the Owyhees, about southwest of Boise. This occurred in 1912, but she had been a kind-hearted and nurturing denizen of the town. She never turned away a person that was in need of healing. Oftentimes, prostitutes would care for the sick. This happened in Wallace. It happened in Wardner when outbreaks would happen of different fevers and whatnot. But so this woman would heal people at great danger and risk to herself. And she was known for purchasing warm clothing for the poor children especially. But when this very good woman died, she was seen as being basically, let me just put this as rough as I can put it, as basic. We all doctor and dress it up to sound all moral and whatnot. But she was, no matter how many good deeds she did, she was accused of putting a man's thingy, or many men's thingies, into her thingy.
Oh.
And so she was refused respect for this, and she was kept out of Ruby City Cemetery. It's just outside of Silver City, but she was kept out of the fence of that consecrated ground. But she was buried close, the paper said, the Silver City Avalanche. You know, I say piss on that.
I agree. Piss on that. Piss on her, that. Do you know if her grave's marked?
I don't know if it's one of the ones that still has a marker or not, but we should definitely. 1912 would say there's a good shot. But I should look that up. You should look that up. Yeah better you.
Uh-huh. Oh, find a grave, here I come.
Yeah, that's right. My favorite. But I'd like to throw out my own opinion here, Jeff. So I was listening to a podcast about J.J. Astor, John Jacob Astor.
Ooh, I sent you that.
Right? Waldorf Astoria, his fourth great-great-great-great-grandson started that. But, you know, this very wealthy family. Now, he is looked upon, and his family have been written about positively. These great Americans that were great Germans, then became great Americans. But long story short, he would sell property to builders in downtown, you know, Manhattan. And he would sell two small lots to these people. They would build too few, but they would cram these tenements full of people. And basically, there were fire hazards, there were death traps, lots of disease would spread in there. But because John Jacob Astor only owned the property, he could distance himself from it, knowing full well what he was really doing. But when problems arise, he could say, oh, I'm just the property owner. I have no knowledge of this. Or, you know, when properties were desperate, he would purchase them at very cheap cost and then later sell them off. And so he was basically this vulture. He was kind of like he was a vulture. He preyed on weak people, but he made lots of money, so we prized him. But these women who do great good for the community but have sex with people for money.
Yeah, J.J. Astor, he had a lot of shady business practices, and many of the men who ran the businesses here in Boise actually did a lot of the same things that J.J. Yes. Astor did.
Yes.
So, all right, Mark, I think that's about it for this week. We need to go and stop here, and we'll pick this up again on our next episode. How about that?
That's a happy ending where I come from, Jeff.
LOL. All right. Goodbye.
If you want to get a hold of us, send an email to info@idahistory.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Ida History. You can visit us on the web at idahistory.com. Ida History would like to thank our listeners, sponsors, and contributors. If you want to know how you can become a contributor, go to idahistory.com/podcast. Please consider giving us a rating and review on your podcast app. I'm Tom Hart, and this is Devil's County.